This is Rocket Talk, the Tor.com podcast. I am your host, Justin Landon, and thanks so much for listening to our second episode. Before we get started today, I wanted to pass along that the show has now been approved by your Apple overlords at iTunes. You can also subscribe to the show manually using your favorite podcatcher at feeds.feedburner.com/rockettalkpodcast or via Tumblr at rockettalkpodcast.tumblr.com/RSS. So to paraphrase the mighty Biff from Back to the Future, make like a tree and subscribe. On with the show. I am joined today by Anne Perry and Jared Schurin. Anne is the editor of Hotter and Stoughton, and Jared is the editor of Jurassic London, and the pair of them are the founders of Pornotickets.com and the most overtly progressive award in the science fiction and fantasy genres today, the Kitschies. Welcome.
Hi.
Thanks.
So glad you guys could join us all the way from the United Kingdom. You'll notice that neither Anne or Jared, despite living in London, have English accents, which is too bad. But you're both American, correct?
We can fake an English accent if you like.
I warn you, if I do, I sound a bit like Bart Simpson doing Dick Van Dyke, which is probably not appropriate.
You know what worries me? That you actually have a comparison point, which means you've thought about that joke.
Yeah, that's what happens every time I've tried in the past, honestly.
Is that something you've made up for yourself, or is that something Anne made up, or like somebody else?
No.
Basically everyone. He's not allowed to do accents at all.
Ever.
Ever.
All right. Well, so today we're here to talk generally about awards, something I'm very interested in, and I consider you two the foremost Americans who've immigrated to England experts in the award space.
Thank you. That is a very niche honor. We'll take it.
That's what I am. I really hand out compliments. So I'm going to start off with a kind of an easy question that's actually really difficult, and I'll ask Anne first. So, why do we have awards? Like, what purpose do they serve?
Primarily, I think, to get conversation going about books. It's a way of getting people to talk about what's going on in a year in publishing, and generating a shortlist, for example, gives people sort of a point to begin their discussions about what awards are for and whether those books fit the criteria that they've decided awards are for.
Jared, is it really just to have a slap fight on the internet?
Definitely to have a slap fight on the internet. But I think you just succinctly said what Anne was flailing around, which is it is that awards are there to start conversations around books. And they're like anything else, be it a blog or a newspaper article or any list. It's just a way of getting recommendations out there, throwing them out to the public, and getting people to talk about the books that are there. And awards, because of their, you know, lofty nature, have a tendency to generate a lot of discussion. Awards pretend to be right, which gives their recommendations a little more weight than others.
And these discussions often do happen online.
With slapping.
With slapping.
Yeah, discussion is awesome, and that's great, and I'm glad that we have it. But at the end of the day, most folks are in the business to sell books, and I'm always very curious, like, do you guys think awards help sell books?
Yes.
That's sort of like the $64,000 question.
Yes. Well, that would probably be the sum total of every book every award is sold. we've had a lot of conversations about this with both people running other awards and with booksellers and agents. And I know from a purely commercial point of view, there is evidence that a few of the top tier awards, and by that I mean, honestly, the big literary awards like the Booker Prize, those absolutely push books like crazy, and they do very well. And those awards are actually very well geared up to sell books. They have a massive marketing investment in them. Anne can probably say more about what it means sort of behind the scenes to an author to win an award or to publishers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's enormously important for a publishing house. It means that the books that they're publishing are relevant to the community and have the potential to reach out to the mass market. And of course, it's incredibly important for authors, not just because it makes them feel good, but because it means that people, you know, are recognizing what they're doing and how they're doing it.
One of the things you'll notice about the genre community, I think anybody notices this, is we have a boatload of awards. I mean, there are like six that like we really pay attention to, and then like a dozen that are like more niche or more important to certain communities within the genre. I mean, for example, there's an award that the Baltimore Science Fiction Society gives away every year for the best debut, and it's a $1,000 prize. It's actually a pretty cool award to win, but it doesn't get a lot of talk. It's called the Compton Crook Award. It doesn't get a lot of talk outside of that circle, right? So we have a lot of those awards as well. And so my question is, why do you think we have such a diffuse award scene? And do we have a diffuse award scene? I mean, is our award scene more diffuse than, say, mystery and thrillers? I mean, I don't really know, but maybe you guys do.
I think it probably goes back to, and I'm making this up, I'm just going to start with that, but I think it's linked to science fiction and fantasy's convention heritage, which is that roving sense of community where people sort of pick up and, like, you know, beardy dice-rolling nomads, move from one city to another, have conventions, sell books to one another, sing some songs, drink real ale, and move on. And that's great. That is an integral part of our past. But it also means that absolutely every gathering of science fiction and fantasy fans, if you get more than six, you have critical mass, and they found an award. I mean, every convention has one. Every society has one. Every society within a convention has several. And honestly, just like the explosion of blogs or the explosion of you know, citizen reviewing and peer reviewing that you have on things like Amazon and Goodreads, there's nothing bad about this. It's just more opinions, more recommendations that are out there. And the trick for readers, and also I suppose for publishers and those in the industry, is just understanding which of those recommendations they value most.
I think there's also a sense that, I mean, certainly outside of genre, non-genre fans wouldn't sort of understand that SFF is really diffuse, as you say. But, you know, anybody who is a fan of science fiction and fantasy knows that genre is a billion subgenres. And part of the reason that I think there are so many separate awards all over the place is because every single one is trying to fill a perceived gap in the sort of SFF award industry. I mean, one of the reasons that we started the Kitschies was because we saw that the UK didn't really have an award for both science fiction and fantasy, sort of using the criteria that we think is important. We, the two of us personally, just sort of sat down and came up with some criteria that we thought wasn't sort of being met by other awards in the industry. But, you know, we're not the only two people who've had that idea. It's all over the place. And anytime you start a convention, I mean, it creates a focal point for the convention. It creates a focal point for everybody who attends a convention and gives them something to talk about at the convention, is knowing that there's an award up, you know, at the end of the convention, and they can all say convention so many times. The point being that we in genre see our interest as being significantly more diffuse than perhaps people who are outside of genre might understand. And awards are a way of sort of filling up that gap. It's like saying that there's more out there than just giving an award to the best science fiction novel of the year, because what is science fiction? I mean, it's been an ongoing debate for as long as science fiction's been around, which has been, you know, a little more than a century now. Close to two.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I would just point out that as award founders, and based on Jared's definition of where awards come from, you are both bearded dice-rolling nomads, apparently.
Well,
that's totally fair.
One of us is a little furrier than the other. We both roll dice, and we are technically nomads, so we'll take it.
Fair enough. So one of the things you didn't mention in that thing that I've always wondered about, and I think has some merit, you know, obviously the literary community has largely rejected science fiction and fantasy in a lot of ways. I mean, if you look at a lot of awards, I think it's the Time Magazine Award that does recognize some genre. They recognize mystery and thriller with an award. They recognize a few other subcategories of fiction, but they do not recognize science fiction and fantasy as a subgenre in and of itself worth recognition. And I think a lot of major awards tend to overlook science fiction and fantasy when it comes to award time. And I've always felt like some of the focus of the awards community within the SFF community is reflective of what I would frankly call an inferiority complex. That if you won't recognize us, well, damn it, we're going to recognize ourselves a lot. Do you think that has merit?
Absolutely. I don't know if it... I mean, I think there's probably more positive ways of saying that than the inferiority complex, but it is, just as Anne was saying, I mean, if you view all of science fiction as one category that feels unappreciated, then absolutely, there's celebration there. I do, however, and we probably can't speak very well to what the American literary awards scene is, but that argument that, quote-unquote, their literary awards don't recognize, quote-unquote, our work is a slightly self-perpetuating fallacy that has become increasingly bothersome in the UK. Just looking at the past few years, you know, the Arthur C. Clarke Award winner 2 years ago was Jane Rogers' The Testament of Jesse Lamb, which was a book that the science fiction community had not noticed until it appeared on the long list for the Man Booker Award. After that, it showed up on the short list of the Kitschies and then won the Clarke Award. Similarly, books like authors like Ned Bowman and Sam Thompson, all of these are actually genre titles, great genre titles. Ruth Ozeki, who just won the Kitschies, all of them appeared first on the Booker long list and not discovered by genre awards. So I think we're not quite as overlooked as we want to think we are sometimes. And I know that sense of ostracism sometimes gives us purpose, but it's not entirely true.
But Anne, wouldn't you think that in a lot of ways the Jane Rogers book and is it Ruth Ozeki that just won the Kitschy, do we consider those? Does science fiction and fantasy writ large actually consider those our work?
Yeah, that's it's again sort of one of the major questions, because it was Johnny Mayville a few years ago said that he doesn't think of literary fiction as anything other than, you know, another marketing category. And what we sort of wind up thinking of is science fiction as a marketing category and literary fiction as a marketing category, and never the twain shall meet, even though obviously there's a lot of give and take between the two. But publishers publish literary fiction differently than they publish science fiction. And that just sort of they wind up on the radars of wholly different groups of readers and basically of fans and judges and panelists. And so it's a, sort of a complicated question that I haven't been able to formulate a really strong answer to.
I'm not sure who decides whether or not Ruth Ozeki is science fiction. I don't think it has elements of the speculative and fantastic in it. It is absolutely, if you just take the text off, it's a science fiction book. And the arguments over whether or not a science fiction award should go to it really, really trouble me, because I don't think juries or fans or voters or whoever's deciding the award should let themselves be influenced by how a book is sold. Their job is to be above that.
It's not that they're being influenced by how the book is sold. It's just whether or not the book winds up on their radar. And so a lot of publishers, for example, they might not think of something like Ruth Ozeki as being science fiction. So they're not going to submit it to a science fiction award. So a science fiction award panel of judges may never see it. And it's not because they don't want to or they don't think of it as science fiction. It just never comes to them. And because they've never heard of it being spoken of as science fiction or possibly having elements of the speculative or fantastic or however you want to put it, it just doesn't wind up on their pile. And that is in part because the people who are publishing it, they either make a choice not to submit it to science fiction and fantasy awards, or they just don't realize that it's eligible. They don't think of it as science fiction. And possibly that's because they're only thinking of it as literary, because, you know, they think of science fiction as being badly written pulp novels involving semi-naked women and aliens, or because they just don't want the trouble of trying to explain how a literary novel can also be a science fiction novel.
And in fairness, it works the other way around. Science fiction novels are, many science fiction publishers don't bother to send science fiction novels to literary prizes because they think they're overlooked.
Or they
think it's not for them. And so it's a very frustrating situation. And I think of all people, fans at the, I suppose, the base of the pyramid or on one end of the pyramid or wherever you want to define the diagram, are actually in the position where they should be able to see everything and not create those distinctions themselves.
Okay, well, I'm going to table this for 1 second because I have a huge landmine question that I'm going to ask in a minute. But before we get into that, I just want to talk to you guys a little bit about the Kitschies more generally. We've talked a little bit about the Kitschies within this conversation, but real quick, can you guys just give the listeners a quick hit of what the Kitschies trying to do?
Sure. The Kitschies are there to recognize the books that are most entertaining, intelligent, and progressive, containing elements of the speculative or fantastic, which is a very long-winded way of saying if it has anything
vaguely science fictional or fantastical,
then it's for us.
It's for us.
It's a juried award. It's 5 years old. We've been sponsored by the Kraken Rum for the past 3 years. And neither Anne nor I, just to be clear, since you introduced us as publishers, neither of us serve as judges. Anne hasn't for a couple years, and I haven't for a little while. We just help administrate the whole thing. Last year, we received 243 submissions because our criteria are so broad, I'm sure the judges are still recovering.
But the judges are also very active for actually getting in touch with publishers and calling in books that maybe the publishers didn't think to submit. And so people like Ruth Ezeki and Ned Bowman are really good examples because at least one of those was called in because the publisher didn't realize that it was eligible.
Absolutely. We actually, back on the previous point, we encourage activist judges because we trust judges to be, you know, experts in genre and experts in their taste. So we want them to call in anything that they think is interesting to them because the buck does kind of stop here with the awards. If awards aren't out there making great recommendations and being the best examples that they can be, who is? The Kitschies are active in three categories. We give away one for novel, one for debut, and one for cover art. There's a total of £2,000 of prize money, which I think with the latest conversion rate is about $15,000. As well as bottles of Kraken rum and enormous handcrafted stuffed tentacle trophies, which are kind of awesome.
Yeah, who makes your tentacle trophies?
Why, I make those tentacle trophies.
That's amazing.
It's really fun.
They're pretty cool. There are some strange pictures out there on the internet of all of our winners posing with tentacles.
It's entirely possible. One of the winners for 2012 at the awards ceremony took his tentacle into the bathroom with him. Randomly.
There's a joke there.
yeah. Didn't really go anywhere.
So you talked a little bit about why you birthed the Kitschies. You mentioned the fact that there was no UK award that was sort of looking at both science fiction and fantasy in a way that were the kind of books that you all liked. Is that fair? Is that a fair statement?
We really theoretically objected to the use of the word best, which is what most awards do, and that's a very convenient shorthand for whatever an award wants it to be. And
we wanted stricter criteria. We did want something that looked at both science fiction and fantasy sort of on the same playing field, because there the differences between science fiction and fantasy, and obviously this is a hot button topic, but the differences between science fiction and fantasy are not so great as, you know, as perhaps can be argued were in the past. And you see lots of books that have elements of both and sort of saying, you know, on the one hand, if it has aliens, it's science fiction. If it's got swords and elves, it's fantasy. Those sort of dichotomies don't hold up anymore. And so we did want to sort of pull all of science fiction and fantasy into one sort of broad category. But we needed to figure out a way of then talking about them without just saying, well, this is the best, because what that just doesn't mean anything. Or it can mean everything, which is the problem.
It's also, and I know, speaking of hot button topics, we also include YA. Things like horror and urban fantasy and paranormal romance and steampunk and everything else, but probably the most interesting and topical is the fact that we get a very large number of YA submissions. And in fact, YA has always been extremely well represented on our shortlists and winners, which is a completely different podcast topic, but that's actually a great space where really interesting innovation is happening within genre, and it's a shame that it's not recognized within more genre awards.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I for one have really enjoyed the Kitschy shortlist the last couple of years. In fact, it's become sort of an ongoing, I don't want to call it a laugh track, but it is sort of a laugh track. Every time the Kitschy shortlist comes out, where we all sort of giggle at the reaction of people who say, I don't know any of those authors. I was one of those people a couple of years ago, I think 2 years ago. I wrote a rather long article sort of talking about, you know, are we trying too hard? Are we trying too hard to be recognized as producing literary work within the science fiction and fantasy community? And when I wrote that, I was really righteous, and I was really wrong. I like to... I can see now, like, everybody that knows me is immediately saving that clip to make their ringtone or something, but...
it's going to happen every time I get a text from you now.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. But, you know, I was wrong. I was wrong, and I really think that the Kitschies have done great work in bringing in sort of the new kinds of science fiction and fantasy that a lot of traditional readers would never consider. And I think that's really exciting to see people dipping into those titles more and more. So I appreciate what you guys have done.
Thank you. It's actually, I'm going to steal some vocabulary that Anne came up with, that there are two types of awards. There are celebrating awards, which are, these are the best of the year, yay for us, pat on the back. And there is an absolute role for that, because that does, that makes us feel really good. And that's incredibly, incredibly important and motivating and powerful. And it's nice to know that your book is being celebrated. And then there are elevating awards, which are out there to actually recommend new books and to do exactly what you were doing 2 years ago, which is to say, this is a bit head scratching. What are these books? Maybe I should try and read them, and not exactly be converted per se, but at least try something new and expand your horizons. Creating an award that celebrates is very easy and very fun and immediately quite fulfilling. But we really did want to create the latter sort of award and get people talking about books and create something that people would look back at in 10 years and think, you know, they were ahead of their time with those picks.
Okay, so, Anne, if we're sitting here today and somebody's listening to this and they're saying, well, that's an interesting dichotomy that Jared has just proposed. If I was to consider awards on a line graph, let's say, or a spectrum, and we've got the Kitschies on one end and sort of like the Tiptree in the neighborhood, and then maybe like, you know, I don't know, another juried award, like maybe the Arthur C. Clarke or something somewhere in the middle. And then you got the Gemmell, which is popularly voted. I mean, so what's on the opposite end of the Kitschies? What award do you think is on the opposite end? What is the award that's most celebratory?
Well, honestly, I would, because I don't want it to say, I don't want to sound as though I'm trying to make some sort of value judgment. I mean, like Jared said, there are two different kinds of awards, and the Kitschies is one kind of award, and the other kind of award, it's celebrating the status quo, and that's wonderful, that's fantastic, and there's a huge need for it. And so something like the Gemmells, which is not a juried award, which is a popular award and celebrates, you know, popularity, that's really important. And I would say that that would be perhaps the of equal weight to what the Kitschies is doing, but on the other side of the equation.
In that category, I would say the Gemmell, the Locus, and the Hugo to a slightly lesser degree, because it is the voting pool is curated to some degree, but those are sort of, I would put, the three major sort of popular awards. Is that fair?
Yes, although I think you've got things like Goodreads Reader's Choice, you've got Tor.com's own annual survey of all of its readers. I mean, there are quite a few in that space, and I think
I wouldn't put. I mean, I would be more willing to put the Goodreads and the Tor.com stuff with the Gemmells than I would the Hugos and the Locus, because again, as you say, they do have sort of a curated voting pool, and so what they're drawing from, they're not drawing from a wide popular readership. They're drawing from a small fandom readership, and I mean, you have to be a member to vote in the Hugos, and that you know, that doesn't mean that there's not, that people aren't going to just vote for firm favorites as opposed to what they actually think is the best or should be the best recognized of the year. But it's a smaller pool. And so I think it's doing something a little different from the Gemmells or the Goodreads Awards or what Tor.com is doing.
We have two awards that I believe are by far the most recognized outside of the science fiction and fantasy community. If you walk into a bookstore and you see red shirts and on the cover it says Hugo Award winner, people outside science fiction and fantasy know what that means. And I think it's the Hugo and the Nebula. Those are two awards that are recognized outside the community as having significance.
Absolutely. I mean, they're the awards that, you know, my mom would know if we won one.
You know what's weird about that, though, is that it's they're sort of known for being known. I mean, if you ask my mom, you know, if she walks into a bookstore and picks up a book and says, oh, look, it's Hugo, it's a Hugo award-winning book. She doesn't know what that means. You know, it just, it's known for being itself, and it's not known for having any particular criteria or for having a particular...
Well, I would argue that what she's going to assume is that it is the best. And I think that goes back to what you guys talked about earlier about trying to avoid that moniker. But I think most people will assume that a Hugo Award or Nebula Award winning book is, on some level, among some people, considered the best book of that year.
It's still speaking to that sort of fandom echo chamber, though, because, again, my mom is not a science fiction reader, and so she's not going to... She sees Hugo nominated or Hugo award winning on a book. It's not going to mean anything to her. If I pick up a book, I mean, obviously it means... And it says Hugo award winning. It means something to me. But, I mean, I'm trying to think of sort of like a casual science fiction fan who picks up a book that has Hugo award winning on it. That would mean that to them. But anyone outside of that, it just...
It's like the good housekeeping seal of approval.
Yeah.
It means somewhere out there, someone has created a stamp of some sort of quality on it. I would also actually point out that in Britain, the Arthur C. Clarke Award is quite well recognized outside of genre, which is, it's had a combination. I mean, it's been around for over 25 years, and it's...
Gets coverage in the major dailies, which
it's really well run.
Everybody talks about it. It's well run. Yeah.
Whereas I think, and I don't mean to be cruel to them, but the Nebula and the Hugo Award, I think people know because you have all those chunky anthologies from the 60s and 70s of best science fiction equals the best Hugo anthology and that sort of thing. I'm not sure. I think people can name the award probably more than they could name anything that won it.
I'll share an anecdote with you, though, and we can maybe launch off from there. Renee, who writes for Lady Business Plus and Strange Horizons and a few other places. When she first got into science fiction and fantasy fandom, she got to it a little later than some of the rest of us, and she began dipping into the pool by looking at the Hugo shortlist over the last 30 years and reading exclusively from that, because her inclination was those were, on some level, a good reading list for her breaking into the field. And I think that's fairly pervasive of people that are going to seriously jump into the genre. That's a great starting off place. If that's the case, and we could argue whether that's the case or not, but if that's the case, is that problematic for the long term health of the genre that an award that is what we call, we've talked about being a celebratory award of recognize what's best right now, but not really pushing anything forward. Does that make it the best reading list?
It's an interesting question, in part because what awards, especially a really long-running award like the Hugos do, is they provide essentially a fossil record of genre fiction. If something, you know, wins a Hugo, it's slightly more likely to remain in print and slightly more likely to be talked about 2 years and 5 years and 10 years and 20 years on than otherwise. And so it just sort of winds up having a better chance of remaining out there to be read than anything else, and remaining accessible, I guess, is even more importantly. And so, on the one hand, it does provide a snapshot of a different time in sort of genre publishing, but that doesn't necessarily. I mean, that's both wonderful because it does provide sort of a historical moment, but on the other hand, it's not necessarily representative of what was going on in genre at the time, if that makes sense.
It sort of goes back to the idea of awards as recommendations, and the more a leading award like the Hugo will be a very vocal recommendation and one that people will think to check. I mean, I'm digging into YA right now, and I've been starting with award shortlists because I just sort of generally assume that an award shortlist will be of vaguely higher quality than just finding some random blogger's shortlist, that sort of thing.
But that is just an assumption, and it's, you know, it's a pervasive one, but it's not, it's a problematic one, as any assumption is problematic, because it's just not, it's not giving a full picture of what any particular point in time actually looked like, or what people were talking about, or what the issues were in science fiction at the time.
As long as you know what it is, I mean, I guess, and again, like any recommendation, as long as you know where it's coming from, if you want to get into science fiction and fantasy, something where 1,000 people have basically gotten together in a room and all decided what their collective favorite book was of the year is probably a good place to start, but you have to know that that's what it is. It's sort of 1,000 people having a vote on that being their favorite. And if you chose a different 1,000 people, for many years, you would probably have a book in the Twilight series or a Harry Potter book or that sort of thing, which, again, is completely fine and probably quite representative of the most popular book of the year.
Yeah, but if we were to take instead of taking, you know, the Hugo winners list for the last 50 years as our sort of starting point for genre, and instead to look at the best-selling genre book of the year every year for 50 years. We get a totally different snapshot of genre. I mean, you'd wind up with two totally different reading lists with a little overlap, but it would be, and then again, if you looked at, you know, the best-selling genre books for the last 50 years, again, you would wind up with something slightly different. It would probably look more like the Hugo list than the sort of year-by-year bestseller list, but it would still be slightly different. And so again, it's just sort of, I guess, being aware of what your where your reading list is starting from and what that means is the most important way to approach it.
Earlier, I made a statement that I was going to put a discussion on hold and I was going to come back with it, and I'm going to do that now. It's right. the reaction of the Kitschies. My reaction a couple years ago and the reaction that we saw from a lot of people when the shortlist came out this year of perplexion. You know, what's going on here? I don't know any of these authors. And then the reaction that we're seeing to people who look at the Hugo Awards and the indignation about how that could possibly be one of the best novels of the year every, and we had this discussion every year, you know, the last 2 years probably being the most vocal, but we definitely have this reaction going both ways, where more critical readers are decrying the Hugos and more pulpy readers are decrying things like the Kitschies. Do you perceive that there's a battle going on between these two factions to one degree or another? Anne?
Not a battle per se. I mean, first of all, you have a group of fans, one way or the other, the pulpy ones and the literary ones, but a group of fans who love having opinions and love sharing their opinions and love getting into arguments about their opinions with each other. And so, I mean, part of the reason we have this really exciting sort of discussion going on at any given point between something like the difference between the Hugo shortlist and the Kitschies shortlist and what those differences mean is because the fans themselves, the readers, and you know, I'm not trying to make a value judgment when I refer to science fiction fans as fans. I'm just saying, you know, readers and fans, again, they're all sort of grouped into the same. You can be a fan and still be very critical. The point being that it's part of what makes the discussion incredible and what makes sort of genre fiction itself so rich and robust and wonderful is the fact that we have people who sort of consider themselves, you know, pulpier readers who maybe are object to the fact that the Kitschies shortlist included Thomas Pynchon versus the more literary and critical fans of science fiction and fantasy who don't understand what certain authors and books are doing on the Hugo shortlist. But they're still trying to discuss the same issues with each other, coming at it from slightly different directions. But they're still trying to have the same discussions about what is, I mean, to come down to it, frankly, what is the best science fiction and fantasy out there in any given year, and how is that determined, and what makes one thing better than the other, and what makes the Kitschies better than the Hugos, or the Hugos better than the Kitschies, and is the one more representative of X than the other is, or is the other more representative? And I keep hitting the table, and Jared is telling me to stop, so I'll stop.
I was actually just going to ask Jared if you were doing that.
Really sorry.
Go ahead. Actually, I've enjoyed the punctuation of your remarks with your finger. I think it's been very effective. Yeah. What do you think, Jared? You got any thoughts on this?
Yes. As mostly always, I agree with Anne. I think they're two very different awards, and it is hard not to distill the conversation down to the Hugos and the Kitschies, because they are very opposite in the sorts of books that they choose to recognize. And they are two awards with very different tastes. I do think, as Anne said, the important thing is not that one is right with a capital R or true with a capital T. It's the fact that they all exist and there's a valid discussion between them.
And the fact that the shortlists are so expansive is incredible. I mean, it again sort of speaks to the fact that genre publishing in general is as rich as it is. I mean, that you can have two wildly divergent shortlists in the same year.
The benefit of specific criteria, such as the ones that the Kitschies have, and another great example is the Tiptree, which is a truly wonderful award, is that when you get a shortlist, it gives you a focal point for that discussion. So right now, if you were comparing the Hugos and the Kitschies, you are not only comparing, well, the Hugos reward the best, the Kitschies intelligent, entertaining, and progressive. So you're not even comparing apples and oranges, you're comparing apples to all fruit. And secondly, the procedure, of course, of choosing is quite different. So it's what's fascinating about it is that they are essentially drawing from the same overall pool of books. The Kitschies, again, 243 books. That's a pretty representative sample of
British publishing in a year. Yeah.
So there's a fascinating conversation on why does one award think one set is the best and the other award think the other set is the best? Because we are talking about the same books after all. So let's discuss that filtering mechanism. And that discussion is all the more valuable when you have better criteria to focus it on.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. One of the questions that I've kind of wanted to get at is I look at this argument a little bit, very similar to sort of American politics, where you've got these two extremes, right, and they're continuing to push further and further to the extreme. And I do think, to some degree, there's an observation by some that the Kitschies, every year have gotten, frankly, what I would call more and more progressive, right? The books have, you've had fewer and fewer pulpy titles, I would say, pulpy being a terrible term, but we'll just go with it, on your best, your main best novel shortlist. And it's interesting, I find that your best debut list tends to be a little bit more pulpy than your best novel list. And it seems like your best novel list has trended slowly and slowly more and more progressive with each year. And that could just be the fact that you've been getting the types of judges you're getting, and the fact that perhaps Jared's not on there anymore, being the big pulp fan that he is. The Hugos actually seem to have sort of similarly as well, that they've gotten more and more popular, using sort of popular in a pop culture sense, which could be a function of the internet. You know, the fact that the internet's become such an echo chamber in a lot of ways, and getting people involved through that echo chamber. And so it feels like each is pushing a little bit further out on the edge. At the end of the day, most of our readers are somewhere in the middle. They like a little bit of both. And so I think that's what's creating, could be what's creating this sort of vocal argument that we're getting, much in the way we're getting the same sort of argument in politics. And maybe that's where that's coming from, that our readership isn't feeling quite well represented by either.
I'm sure that's true. I would think, I mean, looking at that trend, you know, the Hugo best novel selection for the past few years has been something that is inherently nostalgic. I mean, we had Joe Walton's book that was all about growing up with the works of Asimov and Heinlein, and then we had John Scalzi's work, which is essentially a tribute to the original Star Trek series. So it's become, and those are really enjoyable books, but it's very interesting that what people are voting for as their favorite in that context is something that is almost counter-progressive. There are things that are very looking at ways to celebrate science fiction's very interesting past. Whereas what you have with the Kitschies is, as you say, people going out on a limb and looking for far more progressive works. I do think, picking up on something you said earlier, there is an interesting contrast between the Kitschies' red and golden shortlists for novel and debut, because what we've got with these debut authors is pulpy, popular science fiction, core science fiction writers that are doing incredible work. That's progressive, that's being recognized by the Kitschies. So what's, you know, if we take this as an example, what's happening between people's
debut first novels
and then
the stuff they're producing afterwards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why aren't established non-debut novelists writing things that are the most intelligent progressive of the year?
And also pulpy and, you know, popular.
So I think that's actually a challenge that the award, hopefully, is pushing back on the industry.
Yeah, that's actually that's a fascinating discussion. We could probably do an entire show on why that is, or you know, if that's actually taking place. We're about to wrap up here, but I just want to point out or ask this question. I find it interesting. There's a novel that's on the best debut for the Kitschies of this year. It was shortlisted or in the honor list for the Tiptree, and it's certainly getting a great deal of buzz for a Hugo this year, and that's Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie. What does it mean if a novel is being recognized across the spectrum like this one may very well be?
Ancillary Justice actually won the Kitschies. It won our debut territory, and I only make a deal out of that because I am certain it is going to win several other awards, and I just like to have it out there that we recognized it first. I think, when you're talking about that perfect fusion of popular and progressive, something like Ancillary Justice, which is like Ian Banks at his finest, plus an absolutely dazzling take on gender politics and post-colonialism. I mean, there's no better fusion of those two worlds. And I not only hope that the book continues to be recognized by awards and readers, but I hope it inspires many more to do the same.
And Ancillary Justice's popularity is an interesting sort of question, too, because it's really, it's writing entirely on word of mouth. I mean, it, here in the UK, at least, I mean, Ancillary Justice, when it came out, you know, it's not like anybody made a big deal out of it. And then people started reading it, and they loved it, and they talked about it, and it just sort of, it's sort of very quietly snowballed. And so the fact that it's being picked up for both sort of more popular trending awards and more literary trending awards at the same time is fantastic. And that has everything to do with the fact that it is the perfect example of a word of mouth book taking off.
Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie is apparently pretty good. I loved it. So anyway, thank you, Anne and Jared, for being with me today on the Tor.com podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.